All right. Well, Jonathan, this particular session is on relationships. We thought this would be a really key topic to introduce this whole series with. And it's because we've seen such a massive challenge in this. And we've worked with thousands of young people, both of us. In fact, you've traveled the country, you've spoken at conferences, you work with our student life community. You're really the expert at the cutting edge of seeing this, seeing the challenges, seeing the opportunities for young people. So talk to us about why relationships is so important to you.
Yeah, you know, this isn't something that I like have a PhD in. It's not something that I've, you know, spent my entire lifetime studying formally in that sense. But it is something that, you know, all of us spend our lifetime studying relationships at some level. But this really came into focus for me. Is I work as the director of our student life program, and I have worked directly with students in pastoral settings as junior high and youth pastors, as the director of missions for a private college, as director of student life for the Unbound program. Work with young people for really since I've graduated from college and before I graduated with college, so over 20 years now. And I just was struck over the last two or three years with how much I was being asked about relationship. And it went from, you know, kind of specific relationship advice, you know, for like, what do I do with this friend situation or what do I do about dating this guy or whatever, to just sort of really broad basic stuff that sort of took me by surprise of people kind of asking those things. And so anyhow, what I have to share here, I don't pretend or claim that this is some deep PhD level research, but I can tell you that this is something that I've been intensely interested in, that I have a lot of practical experience. And because of that, I wanted to try to kind of pull some information together and say, you know, practically, from just a you standpoint, what are some easy things? What are some base things? What are some foundational things that if we understood about relationships and about how relationships work, that it would make a big difference for us? Because relating to people is what we do, no matter what our profession is, no matter where we live, no matter what our situations are, you know, fundamentally we relate to other people. And if we had a couple of simple, easy to understand concepts about how that stuff works, that could make a big practical difference in our lives. So anyhow, that's the background for some of this content, Woody, and you know, share it as much as we can here and really hope and pray that it gives everybody a chance to kind of grab a few things and say, oh, that helps things make a little more sense.
Absolutely. Well, you're the expert on this and you've had a lot of experience talking about it, so thanks for joining us. We're hearing a lot of people talk about Gen Y, Gen Z, what's known as the millennials or the centennials, and now they make up the largest demographic on the planet at 48% of the world's population. And yet on every turn, you're hearing complaints about how we handle relationships, relationships in the job world, marriage, authentic friendship, just, you know, the life. And, you know, a couple of stats to throw out here. The average age for marriage is now 28 for men and 26 for women. That compared to 1950 was about 20. So people are getting married later in life. They're having children later in life as a result. You know, some of the key metrics of adulthood, like getting married, owning your own home, having kids, all those things are significantly delayed as a result of it. And there's a lot of factors. I think college debt is actually one of the significant factors driving this, and adolescence and, you know, other things we could get into. But I think the point here is relationships, particularly in marriage, are a challenge, and people don't always want to commit. And so, you know, we'll be talking about that through this session, I'm sure. But other stats for you. The research shows that the average millennial is on their phone 4.5 hours a day, and the majority of that time is spent on YouTube, Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram, and Twitter. We live in the don't call me, friend me era, and it's a different world than any we've seen before. And yet, it you know, I don't think either of us are scared off by it. You know, there's opportunities, huge opportunity, and this is one of the most opportunistic times in the planet to live. So what does all this mean to you?
Well, I think what happens is that, yeah, people like to sort of wring their hands about millennials and centennials and relationships and all those kinds of things. And there's things to wring our hands about, right? That there's very real challenges and very real difficulties and very real cultural changes. But, you know, first of all, I'm informed by my faith. You know, I try to be a follower of Christ and try to be a Christian, and I think and look at the world through those lens. And so that tells me that fundamentally we're built for relationship with the Creator, relationship with each other. And so no matter what happens, no matter what kind of gets in the way of that, that there is an innate, you know, part of us built to respond to those things. And so that means there's always something to appeal to. But then I think that often what happens is that, and you know, I do this, everybody does this, but you sort of want to blame somebody. You want to say, hey, you know, it's those darn kids that don't listen, don't relate, that are stuck glued to their screens and aren't paying attention and stuff like that. What's the matter with those darn kids? And I think it's sometimes helpful to step back and say, well, why are those kids like that? And I think one of the things that happens is that they're getting a bombardment of information about what relationships are. And all of a sudden, you know, before, everybody kind of had the same experience with relationships, right? You met people in some of the same places. People were people that you either met face-to-face or you wrote long letters on paper with, you know, and then had long distance in between times of exchanging those. And that was the basis for relationships for everybody. Well, now it's really fractured, right? Yes, you could do that. You can even write letters, but you also have a relationship with people that you follow on social media, and you have instant communication with people through chats and texting and those kinds of things, and you can FaceTime them, and you have group kind of conversations, and some groups exclude other people and include these people. And all of a sudden, there's a really fractured kind of different ways to relate to one another, and there's no new rules for that, right? And so if you're a young person growing up in this, all of a sudden, there's just not one way to relate. There's dozens of ways to relate to people. And that means that it's really hard to kind of get down to the basics and figure that out. And I think sometimes this is just about people that don't have the basics anymore. They don't really know what makes a good relationship. And I think that's also the good news, right? If you know some of these kind of core things, then those technologies, instead of being a real threat, those are technologies can become a real opportunity, right? Because if you know some of the basics of relationships, now you can apply that and use that in the way you use technology. And you can really build those relationships in new ways because you can be better connected to each other. So anyhow, when I look at all these things, Woody, I see concern, I see problems, and I think that there's an opportunity to address those problems. But I also see that some of this is just a lack of basics. And, you know, it's just like a sport, right? I mean, any good coach, anytime you're got a player that's having problems, you say, let's return to the fundamentals. And I think that if we have a little bit of return to the fundamentals here, that we can do some pretty cool stuff.
I like what you said about, let's think about the dynamics in play. You know, if a kid is on their phone, if they are, you know, just head down looking at their technology, you ask the question, what else is more intriguing around them to engage them? And is there something you can do as an adult to create a scenario where they're going to be more engaged in the world that we live in, and to be more enticing? And that opportunity exists. And I know you've been talking about it for a long time. So what are some of the relationship myths you see that you think can be addressed?
Well, when it comes to relationship myths, I mean, I think that some of those things are kind of the opposite of the relationship basics, right? Like, you know, some are opposite of those fundamentals. So for example, I think that, you know, one of the basics of relationships is trust and the ability to trust what people are doing, all those kinds of things. And so one of the myths is that you don't need to know somebody very well to have a relationship, right? That you can have this kind of relationship through social media, relationship through Facebook. And the problem with that is that when you have a relationship through those kinds of forms exclusively, you're able to curate your life, and you're able to kind of just put out that kind of thing, that just the stuff that you want somebody to see. And that is inherently deceitful. And it's not always deliberately deceitful, right? It's not necessarily that you're trying to deceive somebody, but there's a lack of trust there because you're only showing the best part of you all the time. And if you build a relationship with somebody just through that medium, right, then the myth is you can build these online relationships. Well, I actually think it's very possible to build online relationships, but not if you're curating it, because that kind of gets against a fundamental piece of a relationship, which is you need to have trust with somebody. And that trust is often based on transparency. And if you don't see that person live in some ways, or if you're not interacting with them in a way that kind of pulls down that barrier, that curated wall, you're really not able to get to that transparency. Therefore, you're not able to trust that person, and therefore, you're not able to build a deep relationship. So as an example, I think one of those myths is you know, you can build relationships just through these new platforms and just interact and communicate through those platforms. And in fact, that kind of goes against a fundamental, and it ends up with a relationship built on what you want people to see you as and what you want to see in the other person. But then what happens is when you have a real relationship with that person, you see the rest of it, and it can be kind of disturbing. Or you never really get to that deep point with that person, if that makes sense.
Well, the science says that 80%+ of how we interpret somebody's opinions, somebody's comments is visual and is done through, you know, seeing their face and their expression. And, you know, you can learn so much more about a person by how they're, you know, how they're actually presenting themselves in that situation. So I think you're right. We live in this world where we're putting our best foot forward. It's almost a utopic society where everything is all, you know, gravy. It's only our pictures of our skydiving or our rock climbing or our this or our that. And, you know, it makes it look like that's all we do. When in reality, you know, we go through our ups and downs like everybody else does and, you know, have our challenges. And
yeah. And I think that, you know, the other thing that kind of comes with that, another big myth, is that volume equals quality, right? That the more relationships I have, the better connected I am, or the deeper I'm known in some way. And so this is easy, right? I mean, like, you've got social media that's really designed to kind of addict us to the metrics. And so you look at somebody and you say, oh, this person is doing great. They've got, you know, all these Facebook friends and all these Instagram followers and all that kind of stuff. It's not that there's anything inherently wrong with having Facebook friends and Instagram followers. In fact, there can be something really positive and really good there, and there's a lot of opportunity there. The problem is when we get that confused with real relationships, right? In reality, I tend to think that most people can't maintain more than roughly 12 deep relationships. And that's not to say that you can't have more than 12 friends. It doesn't mean there's going to be 12 the same all throughout your entire life. But it just means that most of us only have the time, the emotional bandwidth, and the emotional energy to invest in about 12 people that are really close to us. And those are relationships that are really deep, and those are relationships that really matter, and those are relationships that really need a lot of transparency and trust. And, you know, you can be somebody that has 700,000 followers, and if you don't have, you know, a couple of those close relationships, or 12 or less of those close relationships, you're going to be somebody that probably feels pretty hollow and pretty empty and pretty disconnected from the world. And you can be somebody who's not on social media at all. And if you have 7, 8, 9, 10 close friends, you're going to feel somebody who feels deeply loved and deeply connected and deeply in relationship with people. And so, you know, those two things are disconnected. The volume of people you have following you in technological social media type stuff is not a measure of the quality of your relationships. And that's a really big myth that's in society. And look, the results of this myth, they're pretty catastrophic. You know, there's a lot of attention with recent celebrities who've committed suicide. You know, celebrities by definition have millions and millions of followers and people that know them, but obviously didn't have really important close relationships. And suicide is an epidemic. I did an interview with Zach Thomas that you'll see released later, a Chick-fil-A operator. And we talk a little bit about this, about just this epidemic of suicide. And at some level, there's all kinds of, you know, reasons for that. At some level, that has to do with a lack of close relationships. So yeah, maybe one of the biggest myths that we can sort of attack head on is that quantity does not equal quality. And that while it could be an inherently good thing to have lots of followers and lots of people that you can communicate with, it's not the same as having a few people who you can communicate with deeply and heart to heart in a really important way.
So it's been said that you'll be in 5 years the people you hang around with today and the books you read. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. So talk to us about how you choose your friends, Jonathan.
Well, I think that there's an interesting thing in that question. And it's sort of, there's a proactive piece of it. And I think that that's a really important piece. And I think that's also a piece that is worth paying attention to. So if we can break that down a little bit, Woody. I think, first of all, that there's one end of the spectrum where people are kind of like, you know, it's just whoever I'm kind of thrown in with is the people that I associate with. And you know, we really want to kind of attack that head on and say, no, there is a proactive seeking part of this where you go and look for friends and you kind of look for the people that you want to associate with. There's another aspect of this that says that, yes, I mean, there is a point where you have to build relationships with the people around you, coworkers, you know, people you go to school with, your neighbors, stuff like that. And they may not be the people that, you know, that you think are totally awesome and the ones that you want to be like in 5 years. And yet you still have to build a relationship with them. And so one of the ways I go about this, Woody, with talking to our students, talking to my own children, and really trying to think about it myself, is I try to say, okay, what is it that makes a good relationship? Like, what are some of the fundamental things that are a piece of a good relationship? Because if I knew that, then I can do a couple of things. I can kind of assess, like, where am I with these relationships? Are these relationships are actually working? Do they make sense? And how can I make this relationship better, right? So, you know, that could be a more casual relationship with, like, I've got this neighbor. We don't have a ton in common, but I want to just have this good neighbor sort of relationship with them. Or it could be somebody that I want to build a deep friendship with and just to have a roadmap and say, like, where do I need to go to kind of deepen that relationship. So when it comes to choosing friends and picking friends and things like that, I think the first thing that's important is to kind of step back and sort of say, what are the core pieces? What are the fundamental elements of a good relationship? And then if you know that, you can kind of quickly take stock and say, hey, we're on the right track here. Or, hey, there's some problems with this relationship that I need to really kind of pay attention to.
So what I'm hearing you say is you want to be educating yourself or be mindful of the idea of any person that you come in contact with, of being in a position of getting to know them, asking questions, learning about their life. You know, you can pretty much learn from anybody, no matter what worldview, what perspective, what religion, you know. And I think it's always good for students to be engaging those conversations, to be drawing people out, to be learning about other people's perspectives, not that you believe them for yourself, but the very process of engaging in conversation with the person you're sitting next to on a bus or with, you know, on an airplane or, you know, at a restaurant, getting to know your waiter, your waitress, you know, just asking people about their lives and what's going on. You know, the typical conversation starts with, how's your day going? And, you know, then, so tell me about something that's going on in your life today, which you'll get a shock response. You know, nobody's right. Used to that. Like, oh yeah, I'm having a great day. And that's that. But to draw them out a little bit deeper, I hear you say, Jonathan, this is something you are intentionally building into your kid's life, where it doesn't matter where a person comes from, you're teaching your kids to at least ask questions and to draw someone out. And they're running it through their filter of what they believe in that process.
So yeah, Woody, it's about asking those questions and being intentional about it. But I think it's really important to have sort of a baseline understanding of what are the elements of a relationship? Like, what do they look like? And I don't make any claim that this is the final word on it. You know, this is like some sort of exhaustively researched thing. This is just me trying to kind of practically go about finding out what is the basics here. And I want to just share a little bit, like, when I think about these things, and this took me a long time to get to this point. When I think about things and look at things anymore, I try to ask the question and say, not so much the details, what are the foundational things that are sitting underneath all this stuff, right? Like, what are the things, how can I get down to the bottom, the stuff that doesn't move as much, the kind of foundational truths that things rest on? Because if I can understand those, then I can sort of adjust the details for where I am. And so I started asking that about relationships. And I was really concerned about it in terms of teaching my own children. But I was also concerned about it, was like thinking, wow, I got a lot of students and young people and other folks coming to me and asking me these questions. I played the game where I was kind of like, well, tell me the details. Well, what I think you ought to do is this. And I realized that I was really poorly equipped for that, right? Like, I had no idea what was going on in their lives. I had no idea what the details were. I was only getting one side of the story. And, you know, occasionally I got it right. And sometimes I got it wrong. And it was awful when I got it wrong. And it was only limitedly useful when I got it right. And I started to realize that, look, now people are going to have to solve that themselves. But I didn't want to just say, well, hey, good luck with that, dude. I hope that works for you. I wanted to be able to say, here, think from it in this standpoint, understand what's going on. And now, if you understand what's going on, can you help diagnose? Then you can figure out, diagnose what the matter is. So, so what do you, I looked at, I kind of put this little thing together. I call it the very core. And it's just to help me remember, you know, T, V, and C. And the T stands for trust. Every relationship at some level is based foundationally on trust. You have to trust the other person, right? And the V stands for values. You have to have some of the same values as the other person to build a great relationship. And the C stands for commitment. You have to be committed to the relationship. And so when you have those three things, and I put it together as a little kind of mathematical formula, when you have those three things over time plus experience, it equals a great relationship. So when you put those things together, I think it equals great relationships. And if you expand this a little bit, trust is generally based on transparency, and values is often based on vision, and commitment is often based on communication. And so what I do when I sort of talk about that is I want people to understand, like, look, even a casual relationship with, your waiter or your waitress at a restaurant is based on this, right? When you go to a restaurant, I trust that the waiter is going to take care of me, right? I also trust that they're not going to give me food poisoning, you know? I trust that we have the same values when it comes to food preparation, cleanliness, and the kinds of food that I'm eating, right? You know, that we value the same kind. I'm in their restaurant because it's kind of food that I like to eat. And then I expect them to have a commitment to serve me until I pay the bill, and they expect me to commit to pay the bill, right? So even a little casual relationship has that. But now, that's just a casual relationship. Well, why is it casual? Because I don't spend much time with that person, and I don't have a lot of experience with them, except when I do. I meet with some friends at a local Cracker Barrel every other week at 6 o'clock in the morning. And we often get the same waitress. And so the other day we walked in, and actually the hostess said, "Hey, they're all in a meeting in the back. Y'all just grab a menu and your utensils and go sit down." And so we sat at a regular table, and we came out. Our waitress came out with the drinks that we always order. And she said, "Do you want to change anything? I've already put your orders in." And we laughed and said, "Oh, you know us pretty well." And she does, because we have time and experience together. And so then, because we have time and experience together, I noticed that instead of just engagement rings, she had a wedding band. And I said, "Oh, the wedding must have been, I know the wedding's coming up. It's been a while since I've been here because we missed a couple of things." And she said, "Oh, yeah, I've been married for 10 days and all this kind of stuff." And so when we left, we all gave way higher tips than normal, right? We wouldn't have done that for a regular waitress, but we did this for Emily because we had time and experience with her. She's taken care of us time and time again. We have an experience. And so all those things are a little deeper. And then this just expands, right? And so I teach students and I teach my kids. I said, look, when you're sort of assessing a relationship, let's assess some things like how much trust is in this relationship. You know, do you value the same things in this relationship? Are you committed at the same level in this relationship? How much time and experience are you going to have with this person? And the deeper those things are, and the longer that time and experience is, the better that relationship is going to be. If you see some problems in those areas, it's time to step back and think what kind of thing is going wrong with this relationship and why. So when I think about relationships, I think, you know, try to say like, here's a really fast assessment, a way to kind of go, how's this relationship going? And what am I looking for in this relationship? And what do I need to do to make this relationship better, if that makes sense?
So we talk about person-to-person relationships, you know, peer-to-peer. And by the way, we're encouraging people to engage with those that are older, those that are younger, getting to know everybody, you know, asking questions and just engaging in life. But let's talk about parent-to-student relationships. Now, this is something that, you know, sort of designed by God to build character in everyone. And it's a set period of time where everybody's in the same house together more typically. What are you seeing as some of the better things that a parent can do in that relationship with their child?
Yeah, so I think that there's, you know, I think that as a parent, there's a couple things that we really have to do, right? I think that it's inherent that we help your students learn and understand about purpose. I think that we should help them understand about work and help them start to begin this, to build the skills that they need to make a difference in the world, right, and be prepared for that. I think those are two really critical things. And I think the third really critical thing is relationships. I think that as parents, we have a inherent duty to teach this, because nobody else has the opportunity that a parent does to sort of help a student learn about relationships. The problem here is that I think that there's so much information out there about relationships that this starts to feel really overwhelming for parents, because they have the same thing, right? Like, relationships don't look the way they did when they grew up, right? They don't look the way I did when I grew up. And all of a sudden it's real fractured, and there's all these online stuff. And you're like, how do I help my kid navigate online cyberbullying and all this kind of stuff? And how do we go through all these things? And, you know, and there's like, well, somebody comes along and says, well, I've got a 27-point program to do that. You read 3 of my books and listen to 8 of my lectures, and then you too can be an awesome, you know, relationship parent. And it's not that that stuff's not useful. I've actually learned a lot from reading those books and listening to those experts. It's just that it's overwhelming. It's a lot of noise, right? And to be honest, when I'm in the middle of having a tough discussion with one of my kids, I can't remember the 27 points, right? Like, I don't know what it is that I'm supposed to do. And I spend a lot of time afterwards going, oh yeah, well, you did that, and I should have done that, and I should have done that, I should have done that, but I didn't do it. And so sometimes what I want to do is just kind of help parents step back and say, take a deep breath, and realize that, hey, you've got a unique opportunity to help your student in relationships. And the first piece here is just knowledge. If you have a little bit of idea of what's going on, like, you know, if you just take nothing else out of this, but the fact that relationships are generally made up of, you know, trust, values, and commitment to one another, and that time plus experience, you put those things together, it equals a great relationship. Like, if you just know those foundational things exist, now you kind of know what to look for, right? And then I think as a parent, you don't have to remember a lot of formulas. I think you can do it in whatever way God's gifted you and given you the opportunity to be the person you are. But I think that you can do this through 3 ways that you can really help your kid. I think that you can do this by setting a great example. And so the most important thing you can do is, are you giving examples of relationships that have trust and transparency and commitment, and values and vision and commitment and communication? Are you giving your students examples of that? Are you modeling that with your relationship with your student, right? If you did nothing else as a parent, but then tried to just live that out with your student, you'd have done a lot to help that person be really well equipped with life, right? But if you're going to go to a next step, after you kind of set the example for this, are you providing opportunities for your student to experience those relationships with you by setting the example with their siblings, right? As you kind of set that up. And then are you giving them opportunities to experience relationships with other people through your community and church and school and neighbors and all those kinds of things, whatever it is, God's, you know, the unique situation that you're in. And then finally, you know, if you want to get into like fantastic master's level parenting, which is not that hard, right? You know, everybody does this, right? Everybody sets an example. Everybody provides experiences for their kids. So what's the parenting aspect of it? Well, I think it's coaching. And in coaching in this point, and in this case, is just asking good questions. And just having those conversations. So, you know, you've given your student experience and your student an opportunity to have experiences, and your student's having relationships with other people and they're building friendships and stuff like that. And you just casually, as the opportunity arises, you're just asking questions about their level of trust with this person. Do they trust them? Do they think this person is trustworthy? Do they know this person really well? Has there been transparency there, right? Asking, you know, do you share the same values with your friend? Do you value the same things? Do you have the same vision? Do you dream about the same things and look forward? Like, do you have some of the same goals in life? Are you committed? You know, how committed is your friend to your friendship? How committed to you is this friendship you have with this person? And do you communicate well? Do you talk well with your friend? How much time your friend with you spend with your friend? And what kind of experiences you're having together? That's just very natural sort of questions, which causes your student, your son or daughter, to just reflect and think and sort of work through those things. You don't have to have all the answers. You don't have to have some perfect parenting formula. You just have to set a good example, provide the experiences, and then give your child a chance to think about and reflect on what's going on. And then as they do that, provide some guidance because you're the parent, you know, just by default of the fact that you're a kid, you've already got a good bit more life experience. So, you know, as you're asking those questions, feed into them the stuff that you already know, and understand that you do know that stuff, right? Like that's you're uniquely equipped just by the fact that you've been on the planet longer. You know these things.
All right. So, Jonathan, I'm hearing you talk about asking questions of your kid about their relationships, but what I also hear you saying is a parent should be constantly learning the interests of their kids. They should be figuring out what their kids are interested in. They should be asking questions about that. They should be, you know, looking to pursue more of their kids' interests. And you're probably one of the experts at this idea of taking your kids out and creating experiences, whether it's hiking the Appalachian Trail or, you know, going kayaking in Florida or, you know, whatever it is. You're really intentional about that. Talk to us about some of that discovering interest of your individual kids and also the experiences that you've sought to build into the life.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the vote of confidence, Woody. And I've been blessed to be able to do some unique things with my kids. And there's other people that are blessed in other ways. But I like to always make sure and say, look, the things that I've done, the specific activities I've done with my children have worked and been unique blessings in our family. They don't necessarily have to be the exact same things you do in yours. Like you may hear that and go, oh, that's really cool. I want to do it with my kid. And I hear other people, other dads and moms do stuff. I'm like, oh, yeah, we want to do it with those kids. And there's other people that do stuff. And I think, I would like to do that, but there's no way, right? And that's true. That's not. And there's other people who do things with their kids, and I'm like, oh, I'll never do that in a million years. You know? And so, and that's why God's uniquely gifted each of us and given us those, you know, opportunities. And so I always like to depressurize it and say, hey, it's not about doing it this way. It's not about doing this formula. It's the bottom part of that. It's not that there's doing this specific plan. It's the bottom part of that relationship formula, right? You know, it's trust and values and commitment over top of time and experience, over time and experience, right? It's building those things over time and through experiences. And so as a parent, I think you should ask, like, more than anything else, here's a question I always ask: how can I spend more time with my kids, right? Like, how can I just be with them more? And look, there's realities to life. If I was with my kids all the time, I wouldn't be working. And then I wouldn't be providing for them, and I wouldn't be taking care of them, and I'd be setting them a lousy example. I don't want to raise kids who don't do anything else except for sit around and play with their kids, right? I mean, that sounds fun, and it sounds noble, but it's not. At some level, my kids need to see me working really hard and putting in the hours and striving, because that's what I have to do to provide. And so this isn't about a guilt trip, like if you never see your kids because you're working so hard. Some of us have to work harder than others. And some of us have jobs and requirements and duty and sacrifice that we have to make that doesn't make it as possible to stay with our kids as others, right? But that's our unique challenges. So it's not like a specific prescribed formula here as much as it is this question, like, how can I spend more time? More time is always better, so I can spend more time with my kids. And then when I have that time, how can I make experiences that are valuable to them? Well, what experiences are valuable? Well, they're the things that are interesting to you, right? You're the parent. God uniquely equipped you to raise your kids. And so what are the unique experiences that you can provide that you find interesting? And then pursue that, you know, do that with your kids. And when you do those things, you're going to find that all those things get richer. You know, the trust deepens, your values align better, your commitment to another one another grows, and your relationship gets better. So more than anything else, again, it's not so much a guilt trip. It's not so much like do it exactly this. It's just that, you know, how can you spend more time with your kids? This may sound geeky. I'm not suggesting that you do this. It's just an example, right? But I actually have a little spreadsheet, and there's some really important values that I try to track, some habits I try to track every day, and I got a box for each one of my kids, and I try to check that box, and I actually try to increase the number, and I try to make that number as high as possible, like string together consecutive days when I've done something meaningful with my kid. And meaningful is either we've had a shared experience together, right? So if we all went to a track meet yesterday, and I didn't actually spend a lot of time talking to each kid, but we all experienced something together, right? And so that counts. Or it could be I had a chance to sit down and just talk to my daughter, right? She came in the, you know, to the living room, and we sat down and we had a long discussion about her day and stuff like that. That counts. And, you know, I just try to make those numbers as high as possible. And when it breaks, I code the spreadsheet so it turns red. And so I just want to avoid the red boxes as much as possible, make the green boxes. That's what happens, the number goes up. And it's not that that's perfect. It's just that for me, that's an effective reminder to always have that little jag that says, hey, if at all possible, one of the most important things you can do, one of the most important ways I can change the world is to spend some time with my kids and find experiences we can do together. And the more we do that, the more we grow in those things, the better our relationship gets. The better our relationship gets, the more winning I have in life, right? This is really valuable to me. The more it's valuable to my kid, the better example I'm setting for my kid, the better chance my kid builds great relationships with other people. And that all kind of works together. And there's a lot of cascading goodness that comes out of that.
So you're extremely intentional about finding ways to include your kids in your daily life. If you're going to the hardware store and you're taking the kid with you, if you're going on a trip, I know you do a lot of speaking and you're traveling around the country, you're often taking a kid with you and you're looking to include them in your life. That's just so, so awesome. Let's talk about somebody that maybe works a more traditional job, you know, that maybe they don't travel, maybe they, for their work, and you know, the idea of bringing a kid with them may be more difficult. What are some of the ways that they can be engaging their kids on a daily basis?
Yeah, and see, here's where I think that technology that we like to rail against is really, really helpful, right? So here's the confession. I do have the opportunity, more than probably the average people, to take my kids with me when I travel, right? And I do that as often as I can, which, you know, there have been times in my life when that was really possible, and there's been times in life when that's been impossible. And, you know, so when the advantage is there, we take it, right? But here's a confession. I'm terrible at connecting with my kids if they're not with me, right? I'm the kind of person that can go on a business trip and never call my wife. And that, by the way, that's not a piece of advice except for things not to do, right?
Yeah.
My in-laws were fantastic. You know, my mother-in-law would come and spend a lot of time with us. And every single evening, no matter what, you know, Paul, her husband, would call and they'd have a brief conversation, check in. And, you know, even with that example, I can go, if I'm by myself, you know, I'll spend 3 days. And my wife calls and says, hey, I just wondered if you're still alive since none of us have heard from you, right? That's the wrong way to go about things. But here's the thing, that there's technology means that you can stay connected in ways you never could before, right? And so maybe you have a job that requires you to travel, and maybe that means your kids can't come with you and stuff. And you know, while there's no substitute for face-to-face experience as much as you can get, you can FaceTime with your kids. You know, I've known people that have been on deployments who, you know, FaceTime with their kids and read books to them every night. And that's an amazing way to deepen experience and spend time with one another. And that's a place where technology gives us some just massive advantages compared to other people and other times. But look, there's some traditional ways to do this too, right? So maybe you're gone a lot. And maybe you spend some of that time traveling on the plane or whatever when you can't FaceTime, writing a letter to your kid. Or maybe you use your smartphone and you record a letter to your kid if you're not into writing, stuff like that. That's priceless information That's priceless experience. That's a priceless example of your investing time with them and giving them an experience of hearing your voice, of reading your words. And those are all examples of, you know, yeah, some of us can't travel with our kids all the time. Some of us have to be away for duty or for work or for whatever. But that's where technology gives us new options, and a little creativity and a little effort, a little time can really leave some treasured legacies. I get to spend a lot of time with my kids. I've not written them a lot of letters. I haven't recorded a lot of stuff for them, right? If I got hit by a bus tomorrow, we'd have that legacy of a lot of time, but that'd be memories, right? Now look at a dad that, you know, traveling on his plane once a week, and every time he's on that plane, he's recording stuff for his kids and he's writing letters, and he gets hit by a bus. And these kids have an archive of recordings and letters that they can listen to again and again and again, telling them all the stuff that their dad wants them to know. That's a pretty treasured legacy. And he might not have been able to do that in time because of the circumstances of his life, but he's still invested in a way that really pays dividends.
Yeah, this is one of the parents' biggest opportunities, is to speak truth, to speak blessing, to speak encouragement into a student's life. I could count on my hand the number of times that my dad was really intentional about that. And those times, you know, back 20, 30 years ago, mean more to me than probably anything else that has gone on in my relationship with my dad. And I think this is also a call for dads to be more engaged during particularly the high school years, but, you know, all the way down in this kind of life-to-life, long-term vision casting. This is really one of your big roles, is to paint the picture for the young person that you want that person to become, or the adult that you want the young person to become, maybe a better way to say it. You know, moms are always the nurturing. They're there to, you know, to pat the child on the back, hug them, kiss them, you know, when they're hurt, et cetera. You know, the clothing and feeding and all those kind of things are really mom's role. But that vision casting and that, like, hey, here's Johnny where I could see you being 20 years from now. And I just want to encourage you to go pursue your dreams. And not that a mom shouldn't do that, but a dad in particular has a special opportunity to speak into.
Well, I think that's kind of an interesting point there, Woody, because yeah, I think to some level, parents share equally in those responsibilities, right? I mean, so moms are called to cast some vision, and dads are called to cast some visions, and moms are called to feed and clothe, and dads are called to feed and clothe. And yet each of them does it in unique ways, right? I mean, each of them are kind of gifted in the way they do that. And moms have an approach that's just different because of who they are. And dads have an approach that's just different because who they are. And it's critical that they do that, but it's also good that they do it differently. Right? You know, I mean, like, and I know this with my kids, right? I mean, like, we might both be, so my wife and I are both in charge of discipline, right? We're in charge of disciplining and guiding our children. Well, maybe let's not use discipline. Let's use a better example. Let's say we're both in charge of helping our kids realize their skills and get to the next level, right? And there are times when my way has been really effective for certain of our children, right? And they just sort of resonate with that. And there's other times when my way leaves a kid going, what are they talking about? You know, like, and my wife comes along and says, you know, kind of has the same goal in mind, but goes about completely different. The kid brightens up and goes, oh, I get that, right? And it's, you know, this is different approach. And so I think that's true for dads and moms. And I think that that's really important. And one of the reasons that having a dad and mom both involved can be a real blessing. But I also think that this is true for different people, right? And listen, I say this because I think we live in such an expert society where everybody thinks that everybody else has got the perfect plan and the perfect vision. And like, if I was just like that person over there, you know, if I just did it the way that guy did it or that gal did it, that things would be great. And it's sort of the same thing, right? Like, you have a unique way of doing things. And what's most helpful is, can you get to the core of it, right? Can you figure out sort of this bottom level stuff that, you know, at the end of the day, more time's better and experiences together are better. Now, I know families who, you know, I have a friend whose their experience is playing together at music as a family, right? If we played music together as a family, my kids would run screaming from the room when my part was played, right? Like, that's not something that is possible. I've got some musically talented kids, but I'm not in that realm. And so that's not a good thing for us to do together, right? We like to canoe and be on the water, right? And I have friends who just the idea of getting in a boat with the possibility of dumping in a river, just, you know, it's going down a river with possibly snakes and spiders is horrifying to them, right? That's okay. There's nothing inherently great about being in a river. I mean, there's great things about it. There's advantages to it and things you can learn. And there's nothing that says that music is the only way to raise kids with character. There's wonderful things about music, and there's wonderful things about family that plays together. But that family looks a little different than mine, and my family looks a little different than them. But the point is, we both have gotten down this foundational thing, which is, you know, time and experience. And just like moms and dads have sort of some shared responsibility, but real different ways of getting there, each of us has some different ways to get there. And don't be scared of that. Instead, relax and say, that's who I am. I'm going to do it my way. But I'm not just doing this randomly. I've got an idea, the stuff at the bottom that I'm shooting for. And I've got some things that guide me and give me some guardrails so that I know kind of where I'm aiming. And that can make all the difference.
So Jonathan, you've talked about being an example to your kids, modeling this. You've talked about creating experiences and looking for ways that kids can actually participate. And then you talk about coaching, which is asking questions and constantly engaging them and drawing them out. Kind of as we get to the end of this session, what would you say are maybe a last final word of advice or wisdom that you'd want to impart?
Yeah, so I would just kind of return to that. Well, here's the thing. And you know, a lot of this is, you know, you've ever heard this thing, if you can't play, you coach, you know, those that can't coach. And there's a little bit of a barb in that that's not entirely true. But there is something about that, you know, people who figure things out is often because they had challenges with it, right? And that's certainly true for me in this case, right? I would go to conferences and I would listen to speakers and I'd read books and I'd be like, wow, you know, I want my kids to do all these awesome things and do this and this and this and this and this. And then, reality hit. And I didn't have those capabilities. Like, I didn't have that energy. I didn't have that time. I didn't have those skills. And yeah, some of that was I made some mistakes, right? Like, I missed opportunities and I screwed things up. And I got a couple really painful memories of things where I know the opportunity was there and I just blew it. And, you know, just failed. I had a season with my oldest son where I just wasted a bunch of opportunities. I just didn't invest the time. I missed the experiences. I traded them for things that weren't worth it. And as a result, I got a relationship that went down. You know, like if you have no time and no experiences, that doesn't equal a great relationship. It equals a strained relationship. And that's just flat a mistake. I just screwed it up, right? And so there's things like that. But then there was the other side of it, which was I was trying to be 27,000 different things. I was trying to aspire to 18 different goals. And I was trying to be something that I just frankly wasn't capable of. And so when you say final piece of advice, I want to decompress and de-stress for parents. And I want to, because I think if you're parenting from fear, if you're parenting from this sort of guilt that you're not doing enough, or you're doing it wrong, you don't understand it, or you're kind of scared it's going to all go wrong or whatever, that's a heck of a burden to carry. And it probably affects your parenting in bad ways, which also continues to stress you out, right? I think that if I could do anything to help you, it's just take a deep breath. Right? You're the parent. They're your kids. Nobody can uniquely love them like you can. Nobody can give them the experiences like you can. Nobody can give them time that's worth as much as yours. And nobody can build a relationship with them like you can. And that's all you. Like, you just have that because you're you. And so all you really need is a little bit of knowledge, understanding of what's going on at the bottom, right? You know? So when you get a chance, you know, focus on trust, focus on commitment, focus on values. Focus on spending time and focus on having experiences together. And if you do that in your own unique way, making it up for the circumstances you're in, the results are going to be good. And not only is it going to be good for your relationship, it's going to be a priceless example for your child. And they're going to be able to transfer that to their other relationships. And if you're a student listening to this, you know, you can go back the other way, right? I mean, you know, you can use this to build relationships with parents, even parents that you have some strained relationships with. And you can use this relationship to build relationships with other people, mentors, as well as friends. And don't worry about getting everything right and having perfect formulas. Just focus on some of these basics. And then, you know, when things get out of kilter, see if one of those things are off and if you can fix it or not. And then realize the kind of ingredients that goes into this. And when you know what the ingredients are, you know, you might put them together slightly wrong, but at least you'll know what to adjust next time and you can cook up something pretty good.
Sound advice, my friend. This is right on topic and really appreciate your heart and passion for this. Hey, I'd be remiss if I let you off without talking about student life. You're the director of Unbound Student Life Department, which is about 22,000 current students, alumni that get together and do some really amazing things, build community, build relationships. What stands out to you as you think of Unbound Student Life?
Yeah, so this is really cool. So Unbound students are made up of students in all 50 states in like 13, 15 different countries. And many of them get an opportunity to get together live at some places. But we have this really unique philosophy that we kind of build together. And that is, you know, if you're involved in student life, we want you to get together live and then continue that relationship online. And if you meet each other online, we want you to get to a point where you're meeting each other live. And it's really kind of been built on these foundations, you know, this whole idea that if you have some of these shared values and you get to spend time with each other, and then we use technology in a unique way to kind of build those things, you can build some unique relationships. And it's been really fun to see people who have a lot of the shared values, people who are willing to commit to one another, people who have enough transparency with each other to start to trust each other, and people who are willing to invest time, both online and live, to have experiences together. Really wind up building these really unique relationships. And I joke a lot with our student body, and I say other students will talk about, you know, where it's the cool place to hang out on campus. And you're going to talk about which airport is the best Starbucks, because of the unique nature of Unbound, you're going to often fly in together to some place and do something. And that means that those experiences are pretty intense. And so the time together really kind of gets exponentially magnified for all these kinds of things. And it's really unique, the kinds of really deep, committed relationships and friendships that form out of that. And I've watched students start businesses together. I've watched students start ministries and organizations together. I've watched students build deep, lifelong friendships together. And I've attended an awful lot of weddings. And so there's just a really unique kind of connection that happens as we watch some of this play out in a place where, you know, we're using technology to really connect instead of sort of drive apart and get shallow.
Jonathan, this has been fun. Thank you. If your audience here listening in, you want to get to know Jonathan a little better, go to jonathanbrush.com. And I think you got a new website that's coming in the next few weeks.
Live by the time you see this, absolutely.
Okay. So. All right. Well, if you want to find out more about what's going on in Jonathan's life, then jonathanbrush.com. Jonathan, thank you.
My name is Savannah Grant, and I am passionate about connecting people, inspiring them to live life to the full, and helping them to understand the world around them and their place in it.
Hey, my name is Aaron. My passion is telling stories through photography.
Hey there, my name is Jordan McGuire. I'm passionate about creating through art, business, and occasionally writing.
I'm absolutely passionate about art and creativity.
I'm passionate about helping others discover what they believe and why they believe it.
My favorite thing is just getting to know people, understanding them more. And when I started Unbound, right at the end of last year, I was looking at the program and I was like, okay, so it's super flexible and it's going to be way cheaper and I can get my degree way faster, even with doing all this other stuff. But where are the people? Your laptop, some siblings, your mom, oh, and those random people at the testing center. That's pretty much it. I was really, really wrong, guys.
So the community has helped me to achieve my goals by supporting me through every step of my college journey. And this community has an incredibly intentional outlook because it is long distance and because people come together across thousands of miles. There's an intentionality and support in this community that is absolutely amazing.
The Unbound community has been instrumental in connecting me with a group of people who are like-minded, who are big picture thinkers, visionaries. We have traveled together. We have had hours upon hours of conversation about life and calling and vision.
I love seeing our community move out together to do things that make a positive impact. Even though we may be thousands of miles apart, this community has randomly called with encouraging words, prayed for me when life is tough, and shared laughs and tears. We've started things together, blessed people together, and lived love.
Community has helped me to find a voice and a confidence that I wasn't really able to find before. Seeing other people reach their goals and start businesses and graduate and do so many amazing things has been just incredibly inspiring to just keep pushing forward.
You are relatable. You understand what people are like and what people are going through. You have genuine care and concern for each other. You understand what you believe, and then you live your lives in genuine ways. Encourage others to do so. So to all of you in the community, thank you for being there. Thank you for putting an effort to grow this community.
For reminding me that my audacious dreams are completely possible. For pushing me to be unapologetically myself and to live with passion and enthusiasm.
You guys encourage me and tell me that age doesn't matter, but maturity does.
Thank you. You're inspirational.
It has all been shaping who I am today.
Living meaningfully is living together. And we've done exactly that. I am unbound.
I am unbound.
We are unbound. Come on.